Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 151 for comics originally released on June 30th, 2010. Starting us off in DC is another one of those X-100 issues. This time it's Wonder Woman 600. A very nice cover by George Perez with like 20 people listed on the credits on the cover. So quite a few people involved with this.
This was my favorite of the Centennial issues by DC. And the interesting thing about it for me was I loved the first story.
Yeah.
By Gail Simone and George Perez. One of my, you know, really favorite Wonder Woman stories in a while. I loved the Amanda Conner story.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the Louise Simonson and Eduardo Panisca or Panseca story. And it just kind of illustrated to me that there's nothing particularly wrong with Wonder Woman, that they need to redesign her costume.
Or her backstory, or her character,
or her character, or anything. And I'm reading the behind the scenes with the new costume from Straczynski here, and I didn't mind the story by Straczynski. I mean, it was far superior to the travesty over in Superman.
Yeah,
you know that he perpetrated on us. I mean, but you know, basically, he's making these statements that I don't understand it. I mean, he says, you know, her costumes remain the same with the exception of the mod look in the 60s, which just tells me he hasn't been paying attention to Wonder Woman, because they changed her costume several other times besides that. And every time they change it, it stays changed for a while and then it goes back. So, I mean, I'm not going to get that upset about it. Hey, if I could live through the electric blue Superman, you know, I can, you know, ride this out for as long as it takes him to change it back to her real costume.
I mean,
I showed it to my wife, and she's like, "What the hell is that?"
Yeah,
like, why did they do that to Wonder Woman?
I mean, I don't mind the new costume. I don't particularly love it. I don't hate it either. There were a couple of things I thought were interesting, like the change to the tiara and stuff like that. But I more had objections to the changes he was making to the character and what he thought he had to do to make it work for this time frame. And, you know, you juxtapose that with this story at the beginning by Simone and Perez, and it's like he should have read that and understood the character still works. You know, I agree, this is probably the best, you know, X-100 issue out of, you know, Batman, Superman, and this one. I thought all of them were good. None of the other two were brilliant. This was, again, by far, I thought, the best. There were a couple of things in each story that kind of stood out at me as, okay, that's just a little interesting or odd or great or whatever. The pinups they did throughout the issue, some were great, some, yeah, whatever. I'm just not big on the pinups. But man, after reading the introduction, which I thought was a nice thing for them to do.
Well, look at the pinups, though. You have all these artists doing wonderful interpretations of Wonder Woman. Not one of them did an interpretation of her new costume.
Yeah, well, I think they probably didn't know about it because they were keeping it under wraps.
No, I know, but, you know, how long does it take to do a pinup, you know?
Yeah.
A couple of days, tops, you know?
No, I agree. But, I mean, for me...
It just illustrates to me that, you know, this is Wonder Woman, and, you know, it's not about the costume. And that's what the first story told me. I mean, this is Wonder Woman, the fact that she's inspiring all these other heroes. She's got the leadership. This is Wonder Woman done right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just calls back to, you know, there have been periods of time when Wonder Woman has been a top popular book, at least in my mind. And then there are other periods where she hasn't. And it's more about the writers really coming back to the core of the character and what makes the character enjoyable and inspiring. And, you know, that's what it's not about, taking the character and, you know, I really am interested because it seems like they're essentially removing Wonder Woman from the DC universe with this last story.
Yeah, they had to remake the timeline because apparently she was so broken in Straczynski's view.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, so, you know, now Wonder Woman has not existed in the DC universe at all. You know, she's had this costume always, is basically. And it's like, as a 20 years ago, she was removed from Paradise Island or something, if I catch it correctly from reading this text.
I read it the same way, too. So was she ever a Justice League member? Or was she not? How does that play out? Is this going to roll into any books other than her own, or is this alternate timeline only going to be in this book? You know, there's a lot of questions that come up that if he had done, I guess what it comes down to for me with Straczynski is I think he can be a very good writer. I think what he's planning on doing here with Wonder Woman could be very interesting and very good, but he seems to have to make his own mark on the character with such a heavy imprint to blurt out everything that's gone before, or I don't want to say invalidated or whatever, but, you know, again, I look at this first story by Simone.
He can't work with what he's given.
Exactly.
He has to, like, wipe the slate clean, and just, he's a little full of himself, you know?
It certainly comes across that way, and yeah, I would agree with that. You know, when I opened this issue and I saw this opening splash page with Wonder Woman and all these female characters, I'm like, okay, I'm loving this. This is great. You know, and that's the kind of splash page Perez can do. Simone had, you know, such good character moments for most of these characters in this really short story that it's like, okay, I see how Wonder Woman has impacted all of these other characters and how she's as much as a figurehead or whatever that Superman is in the DC universe. And that she's
right. She's an inspiration to all these characters, and well, not anymore.
Exactly.
It's been removed from the timeline.
Completely invalidates. You know, with this opening story, I thought there were a couple of interesting omissions as to which characters were not in this. Specifically, the ones I noticed were Power Girl, Liberty Bell, or Jesse Quick, whatever she's going by today, Donna Troy, and Black Canary. But you've got a lot of other, you know, main female characters from the JSA, the Titans, the Outsiders, you know, the street-level characters, etc. And again, showing how she interacts with all of those and have that completely invalidated to a degree by that last story just floored me.
I would say that this 7-page story at the front made the entire issue worth buying by itself.
For me, that story, that opening story was a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I was just blown away. I liked the callback to Vanessa and the opening Wonder Woman stuff that George Perez did right after Crisis. And that was a retooling of the character back to basics kind of an approach that made sense and worked. And to be basically acknowledging that so wonderfully in this first story and then throwing it out the window at the last, it's like, I don't get this.
Well, you know, what really interests me is that if Gail Simone had been writing Wonder Woman like she wrote her in this story for the last year, I don't think they would have had the need to trash the character and go in a completely different direction.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. Now, the Amanda Connor story, I really enjoyed. Three things stood out at me with that. One, the Batgirl they used here was the Cassandra Cain one.
Right.
Whereas in the first story arc, they're using the current one. They had, obviously, Power Girl here, which I think is why Power Girl wasn't in that first one.
Well, I mean, this one, they say at the beginning, New York City a while back.
Okay.
So
that's
kind of like set in the past.
Yeah. But it was interesting to have, you know, the other Batgirl in the first one, whatever, you know. This Batgirl, I felt, was a little out of character. She never has had this sort of a dialogue thing. I think this might have worked better if instead of Batgirl, they'd used Terra. But if it's a while back, that may be before, you know, the Power Girl, Terra stuff, whatever. But this whole Wonder Woman cat therapist, it's an odd kind of a story, but the kind of story that Amanda Connor can just make work. And it goes back to, again, the core of Wonder Woman being that ambassador of peace and all that kind of stuff and taking it in a very unique direction. But it worked. It was a down-to-earth kind of a story for Wonder Woman. And again, I go back to, and they're throwing this kind of stuff out for a while. Why? I'm puzzled by this because I thought, you know, so much of this issue was so great. I loved the two-page kind of poster spread we got near the middle.
Phil Jimenez.
He channeled George Perez in all the right ways. You know, it's just a wonderfully done, you know, kind of a visual recap of her history. And, you know, I'd almost like to see somebody do a spoof of this with her in her new costume and a lot of, you know, the rest just kind of, you know, blurted out or, you know, altered to how it would be in the revised timeline or whatever. I was also very pleased with the Louise Simonson storyline. I've never been a huge fan of her work. She does good stuff, but not one of those I would say, oh, wow, that's a writer I just got to follow. And she does a couple of things. She's got some really good interplay between Superman and Wonder Woman. And I think some writers get that really well, others not so much. This was one where it was just really well done. And I loved the bit with the train where we get basically that classic, you know, more powerful than a locomotive kind of action with Superman. And I like how they can play with that kind of iconicness of Superman in what is very clearly a very heavy Wonder Woman story. You know, it was, again, another story that showed the character isn't broken. But man, once we hit the story by, who was this?
Jeff Johns.
The Jeff Johns, Scott Collins one. Which
Although I will continue to compliment, you know, the new Scott Collins art style, I'm really digging.
Yeah.
Compared to his old style.
I would agree with that.
He has become, you know, like, I love to see this version of Scott Collins. If he has permanently reinvented his art style to be like this, he's moved into my, you know, away from my, you know, guys who all kind of avoid their art to, I will seek out his art.
Well, this one, I guess, is blurring straight into the next one, the next story. But because they put the credits where they did and stuff like that, it confused me a little, you know. And then, of course, we get to the Straczynski story. And, again, the W look to the tiara at the bottom of that first page there, okay, that's kind of cool. The new costume, I don't have any real issues with. But then you get to that third page of the story where we see that W branded on that guy's forehead. And this goes back to the comment he makes in that behind-the-scenes thing at the end. She signs her work. Really? The Wonder Woman I know doesn't maim people, even temporarily.
Well, the Phantom does.
Yeah.
She's like the Phantom with his rings. I don't know.
And it means that there is, you know, ridges and stuff on the bracelets, which is going to make that whole bullets and bracelets thing a little more interesting, I think. If they ever do that. Overall, I thought this story was interesting. It was good, but having to retool the timeline, I don't think the character was that broken. You know, this whole bit with the Oracle and I don't know if it, I mean, and using an Oracle for expository dialogue is just an exercise in futility. I mean, they're always talking in riddles and crap like that. I'm curious to get a little more information about the new timeline, how it all fits together, where they're going to go with this. I think it could work pretty well. It could be pretty interesting. I just don't think reinventing the timeline had to be done. I don't think the character, as witnessed by all the previous stories, was that broken. I also found it interesting that in this storyline, she does not have the lasso yet. And he mentions in the backup, oh, she's not at her full power, she's going to get them along the way, that sort of thing. I thought this setup for Straczynski's stuff looks a lot better than the Superman preview we got in Superman 700. I really question the wisdom of DC putting Straczynski on both Superman and Wonder Woman at the same time, and particularly with the change in direction he's kind of doing on both books.
I thought it was an okay story. I mean, it didn't bother me, even though they like completely retooling Wonder Woman's timeline. It didn't bother me as much as, you know, Superman going on Super Walkabout. Although, you know, talked to a lot of people who are really digging that aspect of Superman. But, you know, it's funny that a lot of those people are also, but, you know, I never really liked Superman. So it's like, okay, if they're, you know, and I almost get the feeling here on like Wonder Woman, are they going to just try to say, okay, you don't like Wonder Woman? Well, let's see if you like this. And are they going to be getting a lot of people who don't like Wonder Woman to jump on board for this? And that's what I'm curious about is, you know, who's the audience for this really? I mean, like I said, when I showed my wife, she's like, what? You know, why did they do that to Wonder Woman? You know, it's like, it's not like they're going to get the woman on the street, I don't think, to like jump in and say, ooh, look, it's Wonder Woman. She's wearing pants. I think I'll read this book now.
Yeah. Well, what gets me is you look back at the different takes that creators have had on the character over the years, and even if you just limit it to the post-crisis era, you know, you had a heavy mythological element with George Perez and stuff, and, you know, much later on, John Byrne went with the Goddess of Truth kind of approach. My favorite was Greg Rucka's, you know, ambassador approach. And each of them had different flavors and stuff, but when you got to where it was too far from the core of the character, you know, where she's flipping burgers at a burger joint as her day job or whatever, again, who is that aiming towards? Is that really the kind of Wonder Woman they want to have out there? And the timeline they establish here is interesting. It looks like it could potentially be true to the character. But yeah, who are they aiming this at? And is that going to work? And is it going to fit with the rest of the DC universe? I don't know. I'm curious by it. I thought the art was good. I thought the story was good. I don't have enough faith in Straczynski's ability to have the payoff at the end and to necessarily stay true to that vision, or if I even would buy into that vision if I knew what all it entailed. So I'm skeptical at this point. I'm enjoying it, but you know, I look at his track record dropping the ball on a number of other things, and he's already done exactly what I was afraid he was going to do with both Superman and Wonder Woman, of, you know, putting his thumbprint on it at a very deep level. In this case, rewriting the timeline, and in Superman, you know, making him what looks like to be a brooding, you know, character. But you know, we'll see how it pans out. It's early to judge. I'm just basing it on the couple of pages I've seen so far. This one, I think, like I said, looks a lot better than the Superman stuff.
So for this issue by itself, I give it a 4 out of 5. You know, 5, the first story is a 5. I definitely say if you already like Wonder Woman, you definitely should. Well, if you already like Wonder Woman, you probably already bought it.
Yeah. But, you know, funny how that works.
If you like Wonder Woman and you maybe haven't liked the direction that she has been going recently, which was, you know, a little different. And, you know, just to wrap that up, the last few issues of Gail Simone's run, they seemed really rushed. And like she was just trying to finish off her thoughts before she got kicked off the book.
Yeah.
You know, the last two issues, I guess 43 and 44, were, you know, a bunch of stuff happening and coming really fast. And, you know, it's just, it kind of, you know, fell down a little bit. She had a couple of story arcs that I really liked, a couple that I really kind of didn't like. But if she had been doing this take on Wonder Woman as kind of the inspiration and, you know, strong character, I would have probably, you know, like I said, I think that they wouldn't have had to retool the book like they're doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you haven't been reading Wonder Woman for the last couple of years, but you have liked her in the past, I mean, if you did like the Perez Wolfman run in the 80s a lot, it's worth picking up 600 just on that basis alone. And, you know, the Amanda Connor story was fun. And, you know, it just, I'm saying most of this book was really good, and it's all, you know, based on not the new look, which again shows me that they didn't really need to retool her to make her, you know, entertaining. They just needed to get the right take on her. I didn't dislike the Straczynski story. So I think what we need to do is revisit Wonder Woman in a couple of months, because it's going to be a completely different book.
Maybe at the end of this first story arc would be a good time to do that, because I agree. I gave this a 4 out of 5. I think it's a high 4. Wasn't quite at that 5. I really recommend this to anyone interested in Wonder Woman, whether they've been reading or not. And I think people are going to have one of two kinds of views on it for the most part. Either they're going to really like it at the beginning and think it kind of, you know, not so much at the end, or it's going to be the exact opposite, where they don't click with what they had been doing with Wonder Woman and that classic take, and they're more interested in this new stuff Straczynski's doing. It's possible people are going to love both sides. Again, I didn't hate what Straczynski was doing at any point. I thought it was very good, very interesting, and I liked it. I'm just, again, cautious about is it going to really play out well or not, whereas I loved a lot of the opening stuff.
As a closing thought on that, you know, you mentioned it, is when you so radically change a character like this, it really says to me, it's like, why are you doing this to Wonder Woman? I mean, this could be a completely different character. And the only reason they're doing it because they want to do a completely different character, but they want to have their cake and eat it too, and they want to play off the name recognition of Wonder Woman.
You know, that's a great point.
You know, because
what if
it's not Wonder Woman? You know, it's like it's something that's completely different, that's just using the Wonder Woman name, and it's kind of like an Elseworlds Wonder Woman story.
What if they had done this with a different pantheon, and I don't know, the Egyptian one, Native American, I don't know, some Chinese one, some other pantheon, and do, you know, maybe a Norse one, that'd be funny, do this kind of a take where the timeline has been altered, a character who had this past no longer does, she's got to build herself back up, but the twist being the timeline that was altered for her is the main DC universe, so she's stuck there, you know, and do, again, this kind of a take without kind of taking the real Wonder Woman out of action.
I mean, but what they're basically saying is, well, you don't like Wonder Woman, let's give you something completely different. I mean, completely different. But, you know, just like if we come up with a brand new character that's completely different, people aren't going to read that either. We've kind of established that. So
yeah, that's true.
You know, let's just give you something completely different, but slap a name that you're familiar with on it.
It just seems to me that DC is having a hard time figuring out what to do with a lot of their key characters, Wonder Woman and Superman specifically, and to a lesser degree Bruce Wayne as Batman, and continually taking these characters out of action, having to put them in a different light because, well, you know, there's been 70 years of story. It's like, well, but they just showed they could tell some good stories with these existing characters. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, not only during these story arcs, but following them and seeing how long it takes until we get back to what I would consider the classic status quo of Superman, Wonder Woman, and Bruce Wayne, Batman, just being heroes on a daily basis. You know, maybe we'll get that someday.
Yep. Move on to Secret Avengers.
Sounds good to me. This was a title that initially I was just totally unsure about the need, the purpose, or the take for this kind of a series. It's like, how many Avengers titles do we need? I really enjoyed the first issue. I thought this issue was good. I don't think it was as good as the first issue. Part of that was by nature of the story, where they're in space, in spacesuits. So it was a little hard to tell in a few places who was who. And part of that was just because it was also a very dark issue visually. And a couple of characters, specifically Moon Knight, looked really kind of weird without his hood and his cape.
Yeah. Well, at least he had the big moon on his chest, so you could tell who he was.
Yeah. But there were a couple of times it's like, okay, this is, you know, Black Widow, or, you know, particularly in the silhouettes sometimes, it was not as easy to tell who was who as I would have liked. I love the Beast's costume with the A on it. I think that's just a funny riff on an X-Men costume. I would have liked to have seen more Nova in this issue because I like the character. But, you know, this is moving along at a good pace. I thought we got a good amount of story here. They seem to be setting up a couple of subplots or future storylines. And, you know, it's interesting seeing Steve Rogers as a leader, but not as Cap, although he's just Cap in my mind permanently. I thought this was good. So what'd you think?
No, I liked it. You know, this is one of my favorite of the Avengers relaunch books. I really like Brubaker's take on the characters. I liked the first issue a little more. But this one, I was very pleased because as I was going through it, I was kind of like, I mean, Nova's really powerful, you know, from his previous, you know, series. And he's not any kind of a stumble bum. And, you know, how is he getting, you know, just taken advantage of? And, you know, where is he in all this? But the way that they, I don't want to spoil the end of the issue, it made sense, you know, how he, you know, got kind of taken out of action. It played with it. And I like the Serpent Crown aspect because that kind of goes back to classic Avengers for me.
Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying this series. This particular issue, I'll give a 4 out of 5. I really like Brubaker as a writer. I like Diodato as an artist. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of this. And like I said, I'm enjoying it. It's one of my top favorite Avenger titles.
I agree. I think it is definitely one of the better Avenger titles. I would put it, Thunderbolts, and Avengers Academy kind of at that upper point. Avengers actually near the bottom, and you know, New Avengers is not bad, but a little annoyed by the whole relaunch, and I think they're working Luke Cage too hard. With this issue, though, for me, it's right on that edge between a high 3 and a low 4, and I think a lot of that is the coloring. There are a lot of places where the art is kind of dark. Certain things don't pop the way I would have liked them to. So I think things get a little lost in the panels more than they should, and that's just a major nitpick. Overall, it's got some cool action, some good stuff. You know, I liked Cap's, you know, Electro Shield or whatever that is. I hope we see more of that. I'm certain we'll see more of that. And this is one that I suspect many people are going to be treating as kind of that other Avenger title and thereby ignoring it. And I think that's a huge mistake. I think this is a really good book and worth getting. Again, that first issue I think was really good. And this one, you know, again, for me, low 4, high 3. I'll probably go with a low 4. And I think once it really kicks into high gear and hits its stride, which I think it's got a strong start, this is one that I think could last for quite some time. And for any secret thus and so kind of a title, I think that's kind of an uphill battle half the time.
Right.
So it's an interesting mix of characters. You know, I like how they've got the Beast in there. Ant-Man, I think, is an interesting choice. I want to see where they go with that. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
And then we move on to Velocity number 1 from Top Cow. Now, as a kind of precursor to this, I was talking to Philip Sablik, who both edited this book, and he's a publisher at Top Cow, or the publisher of Top Cow, about pilot season in general, and that'll go up in the interview episode that comes out later this week as you listen to this. But one of the things I asked him, I was like, wow, it took so long for Velocity to come out. It was a winner of in the pilot season a couple of years ago, and it has a completely different creative team. And, you know, his explanation to it in a nutshell was that, you know, they had originally gone with, I think it was Joe Casey who had written the pilot season issue. And since this is a Top Cow owned character, you know, just the story direction that Joe wanted to go in was not a direction that they were comfortable having it go in, I believe, as a company owned character. Whereas if it had, you know, something that was creator owned, you'd do whatever you want with, right? And, you know, they just went along for a while and they ended up parting ways. They paid Joe for his scripts that they're not going to use. And then they kind of switched direction. And, you know, by that time, enough time had passed that Kevin Maguire had other commitments and couldn't do it. So, you know, they ended up with Ron Mars and Kenneth Rocafort on this. And it's, you know, like 2 years later and they're putting out this issue. So that's kind of the short version of why it took 2 years for the pilot season winner in this instance to come out, and it's not the same creative team.
Actually, it was about 2.5 and closing in on 3, and that's unfortunate because, you know, it's hard for them to strike while the iron's hot and that kind of a thing. And I'm sure they're learning from that and doing things better on subsequent pilot seasons. But, you know, I was a little curious about this in terms of, again, they flipped over the creative team. I liked what they'd done on the pilot season, and a lot of that was because of the creative team. Again, Kevin Maguire on art, that's hard to go wrong with. And when I was reading through this, there were a couple of things that I thought were a little, they start out by establishing Velocity is fast. Well, I think most people could probably guess that from the name, but okay, good to play fair. It's a first issue. Let's set that up. No issue with that in terms of that was the right thing to do. But then they do a couple of things before going to a flashback, and I'm like, okay, wait a sec, that's a little weird. You know, and I don't like that kind of a fake-out sort of a storytelling of, let's do this, and then, oh, wait, I've got to go back in time to really tell you where the story started. I just needed to start here to get you hooked or whatever. But that's a very common story technique and just one that I personally don't like. They did have a mention of her being a medical courier, which, you know, was the only real carryover from the pilot season issue. I thought they had a nice reference to the events of the Cyberforce Hunter Killer series, and I thought this issue ended with a really good kind of ticking clock situation where she's got a very clear, this has to get done in this time frame setup, which was enough to say, okay, I need to be getting more issues, although I probably pre-ordered them already because I like the character. This was one where there was no real connection to the pilot season issue, like you, for reasons you were just mentioning. Different creative team, slightly different take on the character. But frankly, neither this issue nor the pilot season one had such a unique view on the character for that to really matter. Either you kind of like the character or you don't. And I thought there were some good character moments in this to set her apart from other super speedsters and things like that. I really enjoyed this issue and think it was actually a better launch for an ongoing than that pilot season was.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the issue also. I mean, I love Kenneth Rocafort's art. So, you know, I've loved it since the first time. I think the first time I saw him was when he did his Madame Mirage character, which it's too bad that that character didn't catch on a little bit more so that we're seeing more of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I like his take on the art here. It's nice. It's, you know, it's different enough from other art that I see in comics. And, you know, that's always a tricky thing because, you know, it's like sometimes I'll see an art style that's really kind of unique and not like everything else that I see. And it'll strike me in a way that it's like, oh, I don't really like that. But then there's other times I'll see an artist that, and this falls in that category where it's unique. I can look at it and it's easily identifiable. Hey, that's Kenneth Rocafort's art, but I like it. You know, it really strikes me in a way that I enjoy his art style quite a lot. And I just enjoy seeing him drawing stories. And I think he's a good match for the character.
Well, and I think he's got enough of a mastery over facial expressions and stuff like that to be a good, I don't want to say replacement, but, you know, follow-on after Maguire. So I think he fit this book very well as an artist.
And to me, it's like it's been long enough since the pilot season one. It's just like you don't even really need to mention pilot season. I mean, the cover says, you know, pilot season winner, you know, from 2.5 years ago. I should just say, well, Velocity in her own series, you know. It's just like, you know. At this point, you hardly need to call back to that. It's just...
No, I agree with that entirely. I'm glad they did in the story, just as a touch point, but not as a make somebody feel they need to have read the pilot season thing.
Right. And I think that there was enough establishing material in here, because it's been long enough. I mean, she was in Hunter Killer, but, you know, not everybody read Hunter Killer that might pick this up either. You know, there's enough here where you kind of get what's the deal with this character. I mean, she's a little more than just a female version of the Flash. You know, I like some of the enhancements they have to the Speedster character. And I'm looking forward to reading more of this one. We've got a nice driving reason, you know, for the series to be going on again without putting a spoiler in here. This what's unclear to me is if this is a limited series or if it's an ongoing. Hopefully it's an ongoing and it's just the first story arc.
I was, you know, thinking they were
they're
doing
not just going to renumber it after six or something, but maybe.
I was thinking they were doing it initially as a limited series.
Because I'm looking at the cover and it's not like it says, you know, one of six or something like that or of four, but, you know, we'll see, you know.
Hang on a
second. She is one of the, and maybe what they're really going to be doing is leading back into a relaunch of Cyberforce or something.
It is a one of four.
Okay.
And I think that was actually a smart move, just kind of hedge the bets, particularly since it had been, you know, so long since it won the pilot season. They're doing a, you know, a different creative team, whatever. I'd rather see them go, you know, do a mini series, make sure that, you know, clicks or whatever, and then move forward. Then just say, oh, it's going to be an ongoing and have it, you know, end, you know, after half a dozen issues or whatever. So I thought it was, again, really good. I like how they give her a good personality, and she's not just some cookie-cutter super speedster. But, again, I've always enjoyed the character. For me, it was again, one of those high three, low fours, and I'm going to go with the four. I think this creative team covered a lot of ground in this issue and gave it a very good start to the story. And this is one that, with this premise, I think they could have gone for an ongoing if they had wanted to.
I give it a solid four. I like the character. I like the visuals in this book. And, you know, again, I think we've said it before. I've really been enjoying pretty much everything Ron Mars has been knocking out lately.
Yeah, he's, I think, the backbone of the Top Cow universe right now, and deservedly so. He's telling some really good stories just across the board. So, you know, if he can keep a coherent vision, and I'm certain he can. You know, I'm really curious where this whole artifact stuff is going to go. I think that could really shake stuff up and do things that can't be done in, say, a Marvel or DC kind of event, just because they've got, you know, dozens of titles to keep going before, during, and after an event. Whereas Top Cow, if they want to totally shake things up, they can.
Yeah. Now, I never read Cyber Force back, you know, in the older days. I read Hunter Killer, Cyber Force, Hunter Killer, Wade wrote that, mm-hmm. you know, and if this is kind of leading into a relaunch of Cyber Force, and you've got someone like Ron Mars or Mark Wade or someone of that caliber doing it, then I'll be right there for the relaunch of that also. So, you know, this is, I'm really curious to see where they go with this particular story, though. It was a really cool hook that they put in this first issue. So. Yeah,
definitely one I would recommend. Whether you like the pilot season one, whether you remember the pilot season one or not, it's just as a standalone first issue, and as, you know, part one of a four part, you know, it was good. So
yeah, this was kind of what a first issue really should be. You know, you can pick this up. You don't need to have read other stuff. You know, you get in, you're getting a satisfying piece of story. They're telling you what you need to know. They're doing the setup. If there is a reference back to something else, it's not an oblique reference. You get enough that if you didn't read that thing that's being referenced, you still know what's going on. And they have an excellent hook at the end that's leading you into the next part. I mean, it's everything that you need to have, at least for me, everything I need to have in a number one issue.
Well, it's also everything I think you need to have in any good issue, and I think that's part of why, you know, Ron Mars as a writer has been really working for us in everything he's doing over at Top Cow. Is he sets stuff up, it's an accessible story, he's got enough to clue you in on what you need to know in the past that you may not have read, and gives you enough to push you into that next issue. So
yeah, good ability, good story structure.
Yeah. So he's definitely an underrated writer. In my mind, he's not getting the credit he deserves.
So, you know, kind of like a non-Marvel DC superhero book that I would recommend, you know, kind of along with, you know, Invincible, for instance. You know, if you just want to get a take on a superhero outside of the, you know, whole history and backstory of Marvel and DC.
Yeah, I'd put Dynamo 5 in that list too, but yeah. So.
Yeah.
So, since we last recorded one of these, I have done some reading on my comics. I had been, 198 comics behind. I read like 150 or so over the 4th of July weekend. Then I got, you know, the shipment, which had another, 40 or 50 books or whatever. So back up to, I think, 71, I think, comics to read, which I really doubt I'm going to get done before leaving for San Diego Comic-Con. But I'm current on a lot more titles. I read the Action Comics that came out this week with the Lex Luthor stuff. Really enjoyed that. Flash, I'm continuing to enjoy. What else came out that I thought was really good? You were mentioning how Gail Simone's recent issues on Wonder Woman had kind of that rushed wrap-up feeling. I very much got that out of JSA 40. I also got that out of The Web and The Shield, 10th issue, but since those were the final ones, that made sense. I was very surprised with the Justice Society one, where it just seemed to, and this is all the stuff we wanted to tell you, kind of a feel to it. So, yeah, I've been catching up on the reading. Quite a bit of good stuff out there. Still quite a bit left for me to read. So.
Yeah, I read less than you. I'm still not up on all my DC stuff. I read over the weekend, I think I read 31 on the 4th of July. And, you know, probably in the last week I've read probably about 60, but not as many as you. I can't read as many in one day as you can. I'd like top out around 30 or so.
It was getting to the point where I was almost going to need a third short box for my to-read stack, and I'm like, this just didn't going to work.
I actually do have three short boxes in my to-read stack.
Yeah. Well, I try to keep it to where I like to stay current. It's just there are points where, you know, because of work and other commitments, you know, I get behind, and I don't like that. So
I have a Marvel, a DC, and an other. And the DC one is a totally full short box, and the Marvel and the others are mostly full.
Yeah. So anything else, or does that wrap it up for this week?
Yeah, I think that wraps it up, although what it probably tells me is if I can have a short box of books that I haven't read, I might need to start looking at some of those books and saying, maybe I don't need to buy something that I haven't read in 6 months.
You should inventory what's in there for the next previews call we do, and we'll discuss those titles at length, if you should keep getting them or not. Oh, the other thing that's worth mentioning is obviously San Diego Comic-Con's coming up. Both Bob and I will be there. There's a podcasting panel on Thursday, apparently, and I think we're planning on doing dinner after that. Is that what I'm catching off the forum?
Yep. Okay.
So you want to meet us and talk to us or whatever in person? And you're going to be at San Diego, that's the way to do it.
And there's also a thread on the forum. So if you are going to be there, you know, go sign up, chime in on that thread so we know to look for you.
And any creators, publishers, or people who are going to be at booths, go to the forum, look for that thread, post what booth number you're going to be at, and we'll come by and say hi. So I think that does it then.
Join us next week when we discuss Batman Odyssey number 1 from DC, Shadowland number 1 from Marvel, and Critical Millennium number 1 from Archaea.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.